Welcome, everyone, to episode 162 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to talk about Jabari Parker, who signed a two-year, $40 million deal with the Chicago Bulls on Saturday after the Milwaukee Bucks rescinded his qualifying offer. So we'll talk about it from the Bulls' perspective, the Bucks' perspective, and then we'll also touch on some of the other recent signings, Shabazz Napier, Channing Frye, etc. Before we get underway, reminder you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I'm pretty excited for France and you know, the sports of France, not just for winning the World Cup, but they have two young budding superstars named Kylian. You have Kylian Mbappe, who is obviously a football player who just won the World Cup. And then you have Killian Hayes, a upcoming point guard slash shooting guard, who is currently, I think, 16 years old. And I've been looking at this dude for a couple of months now. And I'm looking forward to like the 2021 draft? Oh, wow. 2022? That dude is going, he's everything Penny was going to be.
Interesting. All right. Well, there we go. We have something to look forward to in 3 years. I was just worried about the World Cup final tearing the Sixers apart between Dario Saric and Timothée Luwawu. So congratulations to TLC. Condolences to Dario. Please, if TLC doesn't get traded this summer, please hack out your differences before training camp so we don't have a World Cup holy war on our hands. We're just going to spend most of this episode talking Jabari Parker. The news came out, it started to leak out Friday night that the Bulls were nearing a deal with him. At the time, it was unclear whether it would be as a restricted free agent because Milwaukee had not rescinded his qualifying offer at the time. Or if they would rescind it and he would be an unrestricted free agent. Milwaukee did end up rescinding the offer sheet, which allowed the Bulls to sign Jabari to a two-year deal worth $40 million, second-year team option, which I think changes the perception of the deal, at least on my end, much more positively. Mm-hmm. So let's just start with the value. What do you think about getting him? Do you think they overpaid him? Are you less upset about that because they have the second-year team option? Just give us your thoughts just about the monetary aspect of the deal first.
Well, I can never get upset at a one-year deal, which this essentially is. So here's the thing. We don't really know if it's a team option or it's a non-guarantee. Like, it's been reported as a team option, but the media has a tendency to report things as team option, whereas in reality, it's a non-guarantee or partial guarantee. That usually comes out a little bit later on. So we don't really know. Either way, it's team control.
Right.
Which is the most important thing. So I don't mind the fact that he's going to earn like something around 19 to 20 million this year. Mm-hmm. No, it's a one-year deal. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter one bit. I mean, what were the Bulls going to spend the money on anyway? Yeah, they were probably going to try to get a bad contract on the books for a draft pick, but if that deal wasn't there and they wanted Jabari, then fine, that's their right to do so. And look, he's not without intrigue. It's a legitimate talent injection to the Bulls. Question is, does he fit with the current team? We don't know. But that's looking at it from a monetary perspective, as you asked me for. It's fine. Absolutely no problem with a 1 year deal to that money. That's fine.
Yeah, that's where I stand too. I wrote something at FanSided about it yesterday, right after the news broke. Even if it was a 2 year deal, fully guaranteed, it's not the end of the world because it's not Joakim Noah, right. It's not Luol Deng, it's not Timofey Mozgov. Like every time we make fun of a really bad contract, we always say it's the length of the deal more than the monetary value of the deal. If you're a 2 year deal, it would not be the end of the world. But as you said, it's a 1 year deal. Who gives a shit? Like, if
completely
worst case scenario, Jabari busts out, he either gets hurt again or he just doesn't fit next to Markkanen and Wendell Carter, and then they let him go next summer and they have all of their cap space. It does no long-term damage to the franchise. They're taking a 1 year gamble on a former number 2 overall pick who, you know, before going down with his second ACL tear, is averaging 20 points a game, and his three-point percentage has gone up significantly in the past couple of years. Like, there's talent there to gamble on. I've seen a lot of... The two big questions monetary-wise I've seen are, A, why did they give him $20 million? Because the Bucks couldn't match somewhere around $12 million, but they're hard-capped because of the Ersan Ilyasova signing. They used the non-taxpayer mid-level exception on him, so they can't exceed the apron, which is around $129 million. So, you know, if they didn't rescind the offer, and if it was really going to be a bidding war for him, why give him that much more when, mm-hmm. you know, why not sign him to $15 million or so? And then they still couldn't match unless they made a trade. And then at that point, you're still saving $5 million for David Nwaba or someone else.
Well, that's because when you pay him $20 million, let's assume they're basically preparing themselves for a Jabari Parker breakout. Mm-hmm. So if he breaks out big time, and then you just make sure that he's fully guaranteed, or you pick up the team option, whatever they decided it was, if it's a team option or not guaranteed, they just pick it up. And they play him throughout the course of the contract. So at the end of the 2 years, he's earned $40 million. And that final year, let's assume it's about $20 million. Or mm-hmm. 20 point something million, then he's got early bird rights after 2 years, meaning you can pay him 175% of his last actual salary in a contract year. So that's going to be his, let me just think for a second, that's going to be his 2019-2020 salary.
Yep.
That you can basically pay for up to 175% off. So mm-hmm. when he then hits the market in 2020, you don't have to max him out. You don't have to go out and use all kinds of exceptions and whatnot. He's already in that salary bracket where mm-hmm. you can re-sign him using early bird. It makes sense. It's actually pretty clever. As you said it before, it gives them an out initially after 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So if he busts out, no problem. But if he becomes a real thing, then yeah, you can actually figure out that, you know, you can extend him or you can sign a new contract with him without any major headaches, which is interesting. The thing is, and I asked you this right before we started recording, like, what do they do if he's okay, mm-hmm. but he's not going to be worth that money? So let's say he may not ever be the 26th guy again that he was a little over a year ago. He may be topped out at somewhat his career average. Like, he's a 15-5 guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a fine player, like a decent starting caliber player-ish, but not someone worth $20 million. Like, after he's getting paid $40 million over 2 years, like, have the Bulls then overpaid him so much that he'll be understanding when they go to him and say, you know what, we can't really keep giving you $20 million because your play is not worth that? So, like, what's the play there? Do you just tell him straight up that we have a new contract for you, but it's less, and let's be fair, we did you right, like, the mm-hmm. first 2 years. Like, yeah. Will the goodwill come into effect there?
Yeah, that'll be tough to say. I mean, I think, you know, we saw that with the Sixers this summer with J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson. They overpaid those guys both so much last year that they took... J.J. took about $10 million less than he did last year, and then Amir signed back on a minimum deal. That said, those guys are a lot older than Jabari. So if Jabari plays decently well, like if he avoids injury, he's going to have a free agent market, whether it's in 2019 if they turn down his team option or 2020 when he becomes an unrestricted free agent again.
Right.
So I think, you know, at that point, it just depends on how much he likes being back on his hometown team, how much he likes playing next to LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen and Wendell Carter. Like, there's nothing prohibiting him from taking less money. You know, if the Bulls say, we're not going to keep paying you $20 million, we'll give you a 5-year $75 million deal or a 4-year $60 million deal or something. And, like, the Kings come out, they're like, all right, we'll give you 4 years $90 million. It's just up to him to say, all right, well, you know, I could prioritize the money, or if I enjoy being on this team, being with these teammates, I'm going to take a little bit less. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly a dilemma. I think, you know, going back to why they paid him so much this year, as you said, the early bird rights kick in 2020. Even if they turn down his team option next year, they'll still have non-bird rights on him, which allows mm-hmm. them to pay 120%. So that's $25 million, give or take. His max will be somewhere around 27. So, you know, barring him just having like a Victor Oladipo-esque breakout, he's gonna, you know, that's gonna enable them to re-sign him, whether it's next summer or the year after, at least in terms of like matching how much salary he can possibly make. And also, they were probably outbidding the Kings. I mean, there were reports out there that the Kings were interested. Gary Wolfel of the Racine Journal Times, as the reports started leaking out Friday night, he said the Kings were interested. Their offer was close to what the Bulls were offering. So it's maybe not, they weren't necessarily competing only with Milwaukee, but also with Sacramento, who, you know, they already competed with once this summer with Zach LaVine. So, again, as we both said, it's a one-year deal. I can't get that worked up about it. The other criticism financially that I've seen before we go into the fit issues or potential fit issues, you know, I've seen people say, well, why didn't they just take the Denver Nuggets salary dump instead? Why didn't they just take the Farid plus Arthur, get a top 12 protected pick? Or, you know, on our last episode, we ended by suggesting, you know, maybe OKC, maybe they carved out room to get Carmelo Anthony. Why didn't they take Melo and get what, you know, some type of first round pick for Jabari, or sorry, in the room they used for Jabari? Why didn't they do that instead of signing him?
Yeah. Well, I personally probably would have gone that route instead.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get worked up about the way the Bulls view this. I mean, look, he's a 23-year-old who has had success in this league, at least from an offensive standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Two ACL tears, that's frightening. Yeah. That's absolutely frightening. So there's absolutely a risk involved. But at the end of the day, imagine if that risk works out for him.
Right.
And they get a guy who is, you know, a starting caliber player immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And who'll make them significantly better. And look, who knows? What if, theoretically, if this whole offensive system actually works with him at the three? Like, they mm-hmm. play a very, you know, motion offense where positions maybe don't matter as much offensively, and then they just say, you know, screw the defense, we'll give up 150 but we'll score 160.
Right.
Like, okay, you know, that's at least that's gonna be fun basketball. Like,
yeah.
Look, I'm not gonna lie to you, I had the Bulls so low on my league pass ranking last year.
Oh yeah.
Like, this year, just for the offensive purposes or the offensive potential, I probably have them in my top five.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun team. Like, so much scoring. Yeah, they will give up a lot of scoring, too. But you'll have so many games where you will have guys just going off on the Bulls and guys from the Bulls going off on other teams.
Like, right.
I can't hate this. I would probably still have gone, you know, with the Farid / Melo deal, depending on the pick, obviously.
Right.
But it's, I'm not so in love with that idea compared to this one that mm-hmm. I'll make a fuss about it. That's just a personal preference. But it's overall, this is fine. The other part of it, like if you had gone after Melo and you had gotten like a 2022 pick, that would also have been fine. You would still have to suck up Melo's contract.
Right.
And that would still have been huge, and you would have lost flexibility for a year. But like, it's basically the same thing. You lose a flexibility for a year, and that's it. You don't get a first round pick out of this, but in the words of Gar Forman, you get a lottery pick
right.
anyway, because you get a top two pick.
Right.
So I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, the way I see it is the Bulls are basically weighing whether Jabari has a higher chance of becoming a superstar than whatever pick they could have gotten in a salary dump. Right. And, you know, if they did take Melo and then buy him out, that's not making them better in this upcoming season. Whereas they hope Jabari does. I'm not convinced that he has a material impact on their win-loss record. Like, I don't think adding Jabari makes them a 40-win team and they're otherwise a 25-win team. I think just based on how young they are, they're going to struggle regardless. So I don't think it might cost them a few ping pong balls, but I don't think they would have been like a top three team, and now they're going to be like outside the top 10. Like, maybe they slide from 6 to 8 or whatever, but you know, the lottery odds are smoothed out this year. I just can't get that worked up about it. Like there is Jabari is not like a negative asset, not necessarily, at least. I mean, he might health concerns and fit concerns, he might be, but like there's also a non-zero chance he turns into a superstar. It's a very low chance, but it's still a chance. And if they feel like there's a better chance of that happening, then say if they take that Denver pick and Denver ends up sending like the number 22 or number 23 pick, the odds of finding a superstar there are very low as well.
Yeah, so I agree.
So you're just weighing the likelihood of all of these things happening. Like, I don't know. I'm surprised by some of the reaction I've seen to this deal. Like, once I found out it was a second-year team option, I was like, all right, that's great for the Bulls. Mm-hmm. Like, good job. Mm-hmm. This is a great deal. I don't care how it works out. Like, it's worth the gamble.
Yep. Had this been 4 years...
Oh, it would have been
horrible. Yeah. that was the big concern, right? Whenever you and I joked about, oh, the Bulls are going to go after Jabari next,
yeah,
that was with the mindset, oh, they're going to offer him like 4 years.
Yeah, like 4 years, $80 million.
Yeah, something crazy like that. And had that been the case, obviously, like that type of deal, that type of gamble would have been like an F-minus grade, obviously.
Right.
But just being able to have control after a single season just puts it in like the B-B like category. It's like it's not a slam dunk, but it's fine. And here's the thing. I've said this is fine a lot, but it is. It's fine. Jabari has, you know, a somewhat high floor.
Yeah.
At least offensively. Like, you know, he's not going to be a big unknown. He's going to produce. Like, he can score. He can rebound. He can shoot and he can play inside. Like, you have a lot of factors with him going on. And to his credit, like, he actually did fairly well coming back at the end of last season. Like, he played 31 games. Yeah, okay. He absolutely sucked in the playoffs.
It was, right.
It was unplayable.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that would really hurt him in the free agency market.
Yeah, apparently, well, it didn't. It did. Well.
Well, I mean, he maybe probably, not the long term.
Yeah, but he wanted a longer deal than a 1 year guarantee.
Yeah, but you're still getting paid like $20 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
that's fair.
I can't look at that as a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, there's virtually no scenario in which he won't score like, you know, 10 points and grab 5 boards.
Yeah,
that's obviously a very low. No, but that, yeah, I'm just saying, like, that floor is there. It's going to be more than that, obviously.
Right.
Whereas, like, a rookie drafted in the 20s, like, you don't know.
Right.
Like, the Bulls have one of those in Chandler Hutchison. Yeah. Like, we have no idea. He could average 2 points next season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a chance. Like, it's just you're playing probabilities at this point. And they decided the probability of Jabari hitting is higher than the probability of whatever pick they could have gotten in a salary dump. You know, I'm going to give Garpax the benefit of the doubt and assume they explored all of those options before committing to this. I don't know if that's true.
Are you talking about the same guys who basically always say, oh, there's no value in the draft after about 20?
Right. Okay. So maybe not, but, you know, I'm going to assume they at least sniffed around those deals before
committing would assume to so this. Too.
But
I would assume.
Let's talk about the fit stuff now, Mark, because we've been alluding to it. Woj reported, and Casey Johnson, I believe, also reported, that the Bulls do primarily plan to play Jabari at the 3, not the 4, which makes sense. They have Markkanen at the 4. They have Wendell Carter at the 5, plus Robin Lopez is still hanging around there. They've got Bobby Portis and Felicio as backups. Like, their front court is pretty loaded. Their wing depth, not so much. So Jabari's slated to play the 3. Dan Favelli of Bleacher Report shared stats from Cleaning the Glass on Twitter when this news started to break, and the stats of Jabari at the 3 are horrendous.
Yeah,
just like his net rating hovers around a minus 20 most of the years that he's played the 3. So how do you think this is going to work, Mort? Are you worried about the fit next to those guys? Do you think there's a chance he does fare better for whatever reason as a 3 in Chicago than he did as a 3 in Milwaukee?
First of all, before I answer that, there's a source you forgot about there.
Oh, who?
the Bulls themselves. They put up a tweet.
Oh, did they?
Totting out the projected starting lineup where they had Jabari at small forward. But, and also, interesting to note, you know who they had at center? It wasn't Robin Lopez.
Right, it was Wendell Carter.
That was interesting to me, by the way.
I agree.
Yeah, I had a semi. Not going to lie. Well, all right. So, yeah, what I'm nervous about is actually not the production. I'm really not nervous about that because I don't really care if the Bulls win games or not this year.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't matter. I am worried about the development of Lauri Markkanen. That is everything I'm concerned about with this thing. That is Lauri Markkanen. Because last season we saw a strong tendency with Lauri not getting the basketball for an extended period of time. Like Chris Dunn would go into a weird kind of mode where he would like try to prove himself as a scorer or something. I don't really know what he was trying to do. Zach LaVine would literally drive into double teams and take contested jump shots over them.
Right.
With Markkanen just standing outside waiting for the kick out. And with Jabari in there, Jabari is... His playing style is very dynamic, but he also really loves to have the ball in his hands. Like, he's not solely a spot-up shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll dribble into jump shots. He'll take at least 5 or 6 seconds to find the right shot by dribbling. So now you have LaVine and Jabari, who are, in many ways, the exact same type of player.
Right.
Which is really concerning, because what about Lauri? Lauri should be your guy going forward. He's the one guy who actually has the potential to become like a franchise player.
Right.
In my opinion. I could be wrong. But looking at him play both in an international competition and how he fared in Chicago last year, like he has so much in his game that's just been squeezed out and realized yet. I mean, he is so fluid at 7 feet with the ability to shoot. Like next year, he's going to hit like 200 threes. For sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
probably. If he stays healthy.
Absolutely. Like, he was the quickest guy ever to 100 career made threes. And he's 7 feet. And he started driving the ball really well. Like, he would even do Euro steps, like, 7 feet tall, and he would just maneuver in and out. So, it's just so crucial when they get to training camp, they make everyone understand, you know, Lauri should not be the one to sacrifice here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the addition of Wendell Carter is brilliant, because at Duke, he was kind of used to playing second fiddle.
Right.
Or third or fourth or fifth fiddle, even. Like, he was just there. So he'll take, you know, the shots that are left to him, and he'll be fine with that. He'll work on defense, and Lord knows we saw that he can be a difference maker defensively.
Yes.
So here's my... To answer your question in more specific terms. Lauri Markkanen, with his particular skill set, is actually, offensively at least, he plays more like a three than he does a four.
Mm.
He's way more perimeter-oriented than Jabari.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, offensively, you switch them out a little bit? Like, Lauri is still the four.
Mm-hmm.
Jabari is still the three.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Lauri just kind of takes on the role of a three offensively, in the sense that he's the guy who takes the Trevor Ariza kind of shots. Like, he takes a lot of threes.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a lot of the finesse shots. And then you have Jabari working from, like, 15 feet and in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in a more power forward traditional role. So, basically, they still play their traditional positions, but you really play to their strengths, which is Jabari from 15 and in, and Lauri from essentially 15 and out. You just kind of reverse it. At the same time, you also make sure that Jabari takes more threes overall, because that has to be a huge component of it. But still, like, is that an idea? I think that could maybe work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much less concerned with their fit offensively than I am defensively, which we can touch on next. But
yes,
because Markkanen is such a good three-point shooter and was a prolific three-point shooter, he took almost 6 a game as a rookie, hit 36%. As you said, Jabari needs to take a higher volume of threes, but he shot 36.5% in 2016-17, 38.3% this past year from three on, you know, give or take 3 attempts per game both seasons, after, like, he shot 51 threes combined in his first 2 years. So it just wasn't really a part of his game. So I'm sure under Fred Hoiberg it will be. So they can basically run a four-out system with Wendell Carter in there at center. And then,
oh, that's even a five-out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Like, the versatility they have on offense doesn't worry me all that much. And in fact, like, having that many big guys, like we saw it with the Sixers last year, so teams have gone so small that when you then flip the table and you're having a 6'8 Jabari Parker or 6'9, whatever he's listed as now, or you're having a, you know, a six, no, Markkanen's a 7-footer.
He's a 7-footer.
Yeah, you have those guys at the 3 and the 4, like teams just don't have the size to match up with that. So I think it's actually, it's going to be a mismatch for the Bulls offensively. And I think, you know, I have faith that that could work out. My concern with Jabari in next to Markkanen and Wendell, aside from, you know, as you mentioned, Markkanen just getting enough touches, the big concern is defense for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jabari has never been a good defender. After the two ACL tears, he was among the bottom six in power forwards in ESPN's Real Defensive Plus Minus this past year. I mean, limited sample size, 31 games, the Bucks eased him back in. I'm not going to panic too much, but then again, we have a 4-year sample size suggesting he's just not an all, like, an especially great defender. I just, you know, there's concern about whether the ACL tears have limited his lateral quickness, which was not especially great to begin with on defense anyway. And then, you know, putting him against fours, I feel like he has a little bit better chance of defending. Against traditional threes, you know, going around chasing guys off of screens, feel like you're setting yourself up for disaster a little bit, especially because he's going to be playing next to Zach LaVine, who is also a defensive sieve. So basically, Wendell Carter, as you said, he's going to have to focus primarily on defense because
he's going to get so many blocks.
Yeah, like that Bulls team, you said it well, they're going to give up probably 115, 120 points most nights.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. Like, they have one defender in their starting lineup at this point in Chris Dunn, who's really, really good.
Right.
And the reason I don't count Wendell Carter, he's 19.
Yeah.
He is going to make rookie mistakes. He is going to have to, you know, get used to the speed of the NBA. So, you know, he might rack up a ton of blocks, and I think he will.
Yep.
But, you know, he's going to be playing against guys who are bigger, quicker, and, you know, competition he's never faced before. So obviously it's going to take at least, you know, 75% of the season for him to really get acclimated. And even so, like, his real impact is not going to be seen until year two. So, I mean, I would be amazed if he was, like, a legitimate plus defender at the age of 19.
Right. I mean, most centers, it just takes most centers a couple years, honestly, to get used to all the intricacies of NBA defense. And that's if he does struggle early, it's nothing against him. It's a learning curve that most guys go through. It's, like, frankly, unrealistic to expect them to hit the ground on day one and just be, like, an impact player right away.
Right. But, thankfully, the Bulls have defensive stalwarts in, you know, Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine coming off the bench, and Cameron Payne, obviously.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. No, basically, you know, Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, and Chris Dunn. That's your defenders.
Right.
No more David Nwaba, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, which, we haven't received official word yet. Like,
not officially, but Casey Johnson alluded to this is the end of David Nwaba. And this is me thinking, when you need defense so badly.
Right.
That guy could come in handy.
Well, because, you know, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, before all of this came out, said, you know, they were planning to maybe use that cap space for a salary dump and then use the room mid-level on Nwaba. So we'll see. I mean, for their sake, I hope, if they don't do it on Nwaba, I hope they do it on a similar type player, someone who's going to bolster their defense, because that's clearly the need at this point. Or
so who's left? Who's from Chicago?
Dwayne Wade again.
Oh yeah, the great defender Dwayne Wade.
Okafor is still on the market. He's from
Chicago. Oh yeah, that's true. What is it with the Chicago guys not playing defense?
It's Duke guys, man. Okafor and Jabari both.
Well, Derrick Rose as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Like he had one good year defensively, and that was his MVP campaign. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, Wade was a great defender back in his day. I'm not gonna lump him in there.
Yeah, that's true. He did gamble a lot, but I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Before we move on from the Bulls, I think it's interesting because, you know, we talked about they have flexibility next year if they want it. But Casey Johnson had a tweet about how they might be looking ahead to 2020 now instead of 2019. Like, they've been hyping up this whole, like, we're going to be free agent players in 2019. And now they may be looking at the market dynamics, as we've been alluding to in recent episodes, and they may see, like, uh-oh, there are a lot more guys on the... Or there are a lot more teams that can create max cap space than there are max caliber guys. Like, maybe we should just chill for a minute, let our young group grow together, and then come 2020, we might have, you know, an enticing story to sell. But next summer, we're not... Like, there's nothing that we can offer that's going to convince Klay Thompson to sign with us.
They course corrected, Brian. The Bulls are learning.
I think
this
it's
is
smart.
Like watching my son take his first steps all over.
It really is. I mean, I think it's like the smart thing to do. I think pivoting to 2020 would be the right play for them at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Look, here's the thing. They have just never backed off. Like, when they made it publicly known that they were going to be players in a specific year, they never backed off that year. Like, they've gone through it regardless, because we made a promise,
right?
Like, and even if it was the worst free agent class like out there, like, to go back to 2006, like, yeah, they got the best free agent on the market, but that was 32-year-old Ben Wallace.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Or even, you know, like Boozer in 2010 when they struck out on LeBron and Wade. They were like, exactly, well, we need to do something.
Well, actually, they got Boozer before.
Oh,
they got Boozer right. Yeah, they got Boozer in hopes of luring LeBron specifically, because they used to be teammates. So there was something in there, but yeah. But it's interesting to see them course correct. They've never been... Well, let's just be fair. They've never been good at doing that. Like, they've never been fair, been good at really reading, like, what NBA teams do. Like, they've always been behind the curve. Like, when everyone wants a space out offense, they sign Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade. That's what they've done. And like, yeah, for them to evolve, I guess, is very interesting to me. I didn't expect that to happen. And at least I can appreciate what they're trying to do at this point.
Right. And they still have the flexibility if they want it. Like, they could turn down Jabari's team option. I think the deadline would be June 29th. So, you know, Lord knows no free agents and teams ever talk to each other before July 1st. We all know that there's no backchanneling going on.
Oh, yeah.
If there were, the Bulls could get a sense of, all right,
the market.
Yeah, like, let's see which of these top guys are actually on the move. Is Kevin Durant going to leave Golden State? Is he interested in coming to the Bulls? Is Kyrie willing to come to the Bulls? And if none of those guys are, they'd pick up Jabari's team option if he plays halfway decent, and then they can roll it out back to 2020.
So I'm so glad you brought that up. I just want to kill something officially right now.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Bulls fans right now talking about Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving coming there in 2019.
Oh, no.
Because... Here's the thing, like, you know how those guys are apparently a package deal.
Right.
Look, Jimmy Butler hates Fred Hoiberg.
Right.
Hates him. There's no chance in hell.
Unless, like, they fire Hoiberg.
Unless they fire Hoiberg, which they are not going to do.
Yeah.
They are not going to fire him. They are in love with Hoiberg. Yeah. I still don't get the intrigue. There are a lot of guys on Twitter who are like, well, you know what? I'm actually glad they hang on to Fred Hoiberg, because we haven't really seen, like, him roll out every know-how he's got in his offense. Like, he's had 3 years, and it's been, like, some of the worst offense in the league. Like, I'm super down on Hoiberg. I don't think he's an NBA coach. I think he's a college coach, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to get fired, because they fired Tom Thibodeau.
Right.
They were criticized as hell for it, especially because during, you know, Tom's lame duck season, Hoiberg's name was floating all around it. Like, he did not get that job in the best way. Like, he came out looking really bad immediately, and the Bulls are trying to save face. Mm-hmm. So as long as Hoiberg is on, you know, Chicago's staff, Jimmy Butler, and thus Kyrie Irving, is not going to get near the Bulls. Trust me, I would love for nothing more than Jimmy Butler returning to Chicago.
Right.
Jimmy Butler is my favorite player.
Yeah,
that would be a lot of fun. But that's not happening.
Yeah. They're both going to the Clippers.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Guess. Kyrie Irving and LeBron James would share...
exactly.
A stadium again. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's flip now to the Milwaukee side of things, because I think... The Bulls side is obviously the most interesting, but yeah. Milwaukee's handling of the situation is at least somewhat surprising. Like, the decision to rescind the qualifying offer, I thought, in particular, stood out. Because they didn't have mm-hmm. to. I mean, they basically did Jabari a solid by doing so, and they frankly did the Bulls a solid by doing so. If they didn't rescind that qualifying offer, the Bulls would have to have given an offer sheet with at least 2 years, not counting options. So there could not have been a second year team option. They right. could have done it a second year non-guaranteed deal, but it couldn't have been structured exactly the way as it's been reported. So
correct.
What do you think of the Bucks doing that? What do you think was their motive behind rescinding that offer?
I legitimately have no idea. Like, maybe they were just trying to play nice.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about, we were making fun of this last episode. Like, no one does anything just for being nice.
Right.
It seems like the Bucks just did.
Yeah.
I've been really wrapping my brain around this. I don't really understand what they're getting out of this, except maybe, you know, look, the NBA is kind of shady, right? So I can go there. Maybe they just said, you know what, you know, maybe we scratch your back later on. Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. you scratch ours in a different way, you know.
Yeah. Some,
like a Godfather thing. Maybe the day will come.
Right.
And maybe the day will never come, but one day you may owe me a favor.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like it was just a goodwill thing. Like,
yeah.
we'll do solid by Jabari, and then his agent will remember that, and other agents will remember that. We're not going to hold this guy hostage if he doesn't...
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we don't think he factors into our long-term plans, or he doesn't want to be here, whatever the case may
right,
be.
Right, right.
You know, I think the same thing, to a lesser extent, was going to happen with Nerlens in Philly a couple of years ago, where, you know, there was a lot of, like, why did they trade him for a fake first-round pick? Why didn't they let him become a restricted free agent and just re-sign him? He didn't want to be there. They didn't want him there. They did him a favor by trading him.
Yep.
It was as easy as that. I think it's the same kind of thing here. Like, the Bucks have come out and said, we weren't going to match an offer sheet, so we
And Jabari won in Chicago.
Right. And Back. So, like, so he they let Jabari's agents, like, work right. out a deal with Chicago, and then they said, all right, here's the deal. It's not legal unless you rescind the offer sheet. Milwaukee said, all right, cool, we'll rescind it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's just kind of a goodwill gesture. But that leads to the next question of, well, why didn't they want to match the offer sheet, or why didn't they want to retain him?
Because he doesn't fit.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of sucks to say, but he doesn't. Giannis is this all-world player who needs the ball in his hands and who averaged, like, 27, 10, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
What a ridiculous line, by the way.
Yeah, it's like a 22-year-old or a 23-year-old.
From a 23-year-old, yeah. And then you had Chris Middleton, who came into his own, averaged 20 points a game, 5 boards, 4 assists, and is doing so by, you know, being a shooter and being able to play off of Giannis a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There was just no room left. Because right. you also had Eric Bledsoe at the point who had to get more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did not have a strong season in Milwaukee, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, he, even though his stats are perfectly fine, it seems like his impact was just not there. And I think maybe some part of it was just fit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jabari being there, clogging up a thing or two. Like, maybe they just need to focus a little bit more on shooting. They can move Malcolm Brogdon into the starting lineup, like, as a full-time 2, I guess. And then mm-hmm. play Chris Middleton at the 3. Maybe that'll help just lock everything up a little bit more. I don't know. But I don't think necessarily that Parker fit the whole process.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, we've been saying that for, probably like a year now, right? That
yeah, he's probably just a little bit more, actually.
Yeah, like he just wasn't a good fit next to Giannis. And, I mean, here's the thing. When they drafted him, Giannis, they didn't know what Giannis was going to become. Like, Giannis is a rookie, averaged 7 points and 4 rebounds in 24 minutes a night. He started 23 games. So they didn't know he was going to become this future every year all-star possible MVP type player. So, you know, yes, you can argue if they were going to go down this road, why didn't they trade Jabari at the trade deadline? Or why didn't they, you know, we've often advocated for teams to re-sign players only to trade them later. They could have gone that route, but as you said, maybe they wanted to prioritize other things. And it seems like if they had re-signed Jabari, they wouldn't have had, I mean, if they re-signed Jabari at that price or matched an offer sheet at that price, they wouldn't have been able to sign Ersan to the same deal they did. They would have instead been taxpayers. They would have been limited to taxpayer mid-level exception, which is $5.3 million, so they wouldn't have, you know, it would have been $6 million less for Ersan, and they would have had to just change the order of operations, basically. They wouldn't have had the biannual exception, so they couldn't have gotten Brook Lopez. So it's not like they lost him for nothing.
They got Ersan Ilyasova and Brook Lopez, who are not insignificant names.
Yeah. Right, and as you suggested, it's probably going to, those two guys are probably going to balance out the roster better than having Jabari there would have. Like, as you said, there are just so many touches to go around.
Mm-hmm.
Jabari is a high usage guy. Ersan isn't as much. Like, he's just going to mostly be a catch and shoot guy. And then Brook Lopez can be. But yeah, like, he's really stretched out his range in recent years. They're going to add more shooting to that starting lineup and off the bench next to Giannis and next to Chris Middleton. I mean, it sucks to lose a former number two overall pick. A guy who you thought is going to be a long-term piece of the puzzle. It sucks to lose him for nothing. I totally get that. But it's not, you know, they at least got something in the sense of they got two rotation players who, you know, probably fit a little bit better next to their franchise guy. And that's really all they should be thinking about. For the next 2 to 3 years, Giannis is signed through 2020, 2021. Their entire mission in the next 3 years is to do everything in their power to convince him to re-sign again. So they need to just build a roster that makes sense around him. And if it means, you know, Giannis said he wanted Jabari back. We don't know
how. Giannis is just a good dude. He wants everybody back.
Yeah, he's not going to come out and say, you know, like, fuck that guy. I hope he gets cut. No.
He's just not wired like that. He wants every, like, if the Bucks roster could be a 53 people, he would go for it.
right. Exactly. So, you know, I'm sure he's bummed about this, but I'm sure he's also going to look at the big picture and say, like, man, we were starting John Henson at center last year, and now we've got Brook Lopez for $3 million. Like, we have Ersan Ilyasova off the bench, who's going to be a big piece for us. We're going to be better on paper than we were last year, even though we lost Jabari. So I think it hurts. Like, in terms of asset management, losing him for nothing hurts, but there is logic behind it. Do you think, you know, well, we've talked about kind of the top three in the East being Toronto, Boston, Philly in some order. Where do you see Milwaukee fitting in to that next tier now that they lost Jabari? Do you think they have enough to push past Indiana? Do you think they can even crack that top three maybe?
It all depends on Giannis. Yeah. I mean, look, Giannis is the engine here. Chris Middleton is obviously great, but he is a complimentary player. He's a great complimentary player. But like you just said, having this ability now to play, you know, Brook Lopez, Ersan Ilyasova, who are not high usage, who'll just get buckets off of catches, that's actually going to speed up their offense. They're going to get more possessions, because when Jabari milks the clock, dribbling in and out, looking for, you know, his space to pull up for a jump shot, like, all that goes away and you get more fluidity in your offense. So now, instead of Jabari milking the clock, you know, you get a quick could pass out from Giannis from the post or whatever. Boom, you know, 3-point attempt from Ilyasova or Lopez or Tony Snell or whoever's on the court, Milton.
Right.
So the offense is just going to move a little bit more smoothly. You're going to get more high efficient shots as well. Mm-hmm. So I think Milwaukee's offense is, and this is the East, mind you, if that is going to improve, and let's also not forget that Giannis is going to improve as an offensive player, that's going to take them so far. Yeah. I wouldn't even be surprised if they're a top three team in the East at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Boston, I think, is the clear number one. After that, I mean, Philly and Toronto have, like, they're on the driver's seat for those next two seeds, but it would not totally shock me. It's really, I mean, it comes down to injuries, ultimately. But
yeah.
It wouldn't totally shock me if either Indiana or Milwaukee cracked the top three. And as you said,
I'm not there with you with Indiana quite yet, but I might be in a couple months.
They were five last year, and they significantly improved this offseason.
They did. Here's the thing, though. I want to make sure that Oladipo's were real.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. Yeah. Okay. Let's turn our attention then to the other signings. I think both of these were yesterday. We'll start with Shabazz Napier. He's going to the Brooklyn Nets. 2 years, second year team option. We have no idea how much he signed for.
I don't care.
No one has reported it, but it can't be all that much because they didn't have that much cap space. So we can assume if it's not the minimum, it's probably close to it.
That's just ridiculously good value.
Right? It's like...
Yeah.
I have to amend my Sean Marks piece from Thursday to then also include the stupid Shabazz Napier signing.
It's not stupid.
Stupid in a good way.
Really stupid good.
Really good value signing. Especially after trading Jeremy Lin.
Yep. I don't really have anything to say, but Sean Marks is my new idol.
He really is.
He's just been superb. He's been superb. And I'm not gonna go all the way into the whole, you know, they're a playoff team, but Brian, they might be a playoff team.
Oh, god damn it. See, I was literally about to say, I've started to see some, like, because it's the internet and because we can't have nice things, we can't appreciate just Sean Marks, like, doing a really good job and digging out of the trash heap that he was handed 2 years ago. I've now started to see, like, people, you know, people like me are saying, wow, Sean Marks is doing a really good job. And then people see that and are like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. They're still really far away. And, like, I'm not saying they're going to be a playoff team next year. I think they're still probably multiple years away from that. I don't know that they
have multiple years, really?
Yeah. I don't know that they have a single player on their roster that's like a long-term keeper. I want to believe in D'Angelo Russell. I don't know. Like, I don't know that he's going to be the foundation of that team. I hope.
Fair. Yeah.
Jared Allen is probably the closest thing to a guy who...
He's a keeper.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, I don't know if he's going to rise to the level of, like, top three option on a really good team, but he might.
Doesn't matter if he doesn't. Like, offensively, he's probably more like an energy / defensive minded player. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he will score. Like, he's not like a liability offensively, but
they basically just have a bunch of, right now, until we see like what Allen's ceiling is, they have a bunch of really good role players. Russell could push past that. Allen could push past that. Even like Caris LeVert could push past it. Rondae Hollis Jefferson, Dinwiddie, like all these guys have potential, but right now they're just a bunch of role players, which is fine.
And it's the East.
Yeah, but like, given what he was handed, I don't know how you could have done a better job with what he inherited than what he did. That's the only thing I'm praising with the Nets right now. I'm not saying they're going to be a 50-win team next year. I'm just saying, like, he was handed a pile of shit 2 years ago. He was handed a team that did not have its first round pick in each of the next 3 years. And those first round picks turned into Jaylen Brown and then the number one overall pick. Markelle Fultz had a rookie season to forget, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this year as well. And it turned in number eight, Colin Sexton, which they could have used on Kevin Knox or Mikal Bridges or whatever. Like, If not for that trade, they could have had a team starting with Jaylen Brown, Markelle Fultz, and Kevin Knox, or Mikal Bridges. And then that this Nets team looks totally different. But now, 2019 and beyond, they have their own first-round picks. They got a number two overall pick in D'Angelo Russell. Like, it's just, he's done a really good job. And this Shabazz Napier signing is just another, he's like working the fringes well, which is all he was able to do because he can't tank for picks because he didn't have any picks. But
and that, you know, being able to work the margins is, you know, really the most essential thing in team construction.
It really is.
Like, let's look at the Lakers. They get the best player in the game, and then they follow it up with, you know, Lance Rondo.
Right.
Like, working the margins is the most crucial element.
Yeah.
Like, let's assume LeBron had signed to Brooklyn. Lord knows, Sean Marks would have created something around it that would have made sense.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, the hardest thing to do in the NBA is to get superstars.
Mm-hmm.
You usually have to do that through the draft and just getting lucky. But then after that, yeah, you're right. Like, the difference between a dynasty and a team that flames out in 2 to 3 years is operating the margins well. And based on everything Sean Marks has done since he took over in February 2016, if I'm a Nets fan, I feel very confident about his ability to, you know, once they get that type of superstar talent, to build a competent roster around them. And, you know, getting a Shabazz Napier at a minimum deal, like, it makes me, I then turn to Portland. And we were confused when they rescinded his qualifying offer from the get-go. But now, if he only signed for a freaking minimum deal, like, man.
Yep.
Portland.
Yeah. Like, we, they could have had both Seth Curry and Shabazz Napier backing up Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, effectively being able to mimic their entire system in the starting unit.
Right.
Yep.
Hope Myers Leonard was worth it, Portland.
And Evan Turner.
Yeah, right. The other signing of note was Channing Frye is heading back to the Cleveland Cavaliers on a 1-year, $2.4 million minimum deal.
And, Brian, I'll look forward to the next episode.
I'm excited for Kevin Love. He's got a buddy back. Little Kev's going to come back.
Sure. I can't really get too worked up about a 57-year-old power forward, you know, coming back to Cleveland. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I saw Matt Moore had a really good tweet where he was like, I hope they now re-sign Richard Jefferson and then somehow trade for Kyrie Irving so we could just see, just to settle some debates, just see how this Cavs team would do without LeBron James.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, do you think Kyrie, you know, regrets forcing the trade when he saw that LeBron was leaving just a year later?
No, he knew. I think he saw the writing on the wall, and he knew, like, that Cavs team is just so screwed. Because, like, if he didn't leave, they weren't going to have the number 8 pick. At least Colin Sexton gives them some semblance of hope, and whatever they trade Kevin Love for will, you know, they can retool much more easily than they did after LeBron left in 2010.
Right.
But had they not traded Kyrie, like, they wouldn't have had the pieces to then do what they did at trade deadline too. Like, that team would have been, they just would have had no future. Like, they had no good picks forever. And they, you know, they owed their top, or they owe their 2019 top 10 protected first to Atlanta from the Kyle Korver deal. If Kyrie stays, if Kevin Love's there, they probably don't give, or they probably do give that pick up.
Hmm.
I mean, Kyrie might regret it in the sense that, like, he thought he was getting his own team in Boston, and then it turns out that...
Hi, Jason Tatum.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, that makes me wonder... There seems to be a lot of speculation about Kyrie Irving's future, and none of it seems to involve Boston. I know Boston people are very confident that he will re-sign there, but I don't know. It wouldn't totally shock me if he's only there for one more year, and it's why I'm surprised that they're not dangling him in Kawhi Leonard trade talks as of yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it...
Oh, good lord. Like, what if they ended up doing that and Jimmy Butler signed with San Antonio?
Oh, no, that would be fun. Do they have the space to get both of them?
Well, if it's a trade, then they'll just need to clear cap space for Butler.
Jimmy. Yeah, I think, but they've got LaMarcus already. Let's see. I don't remember how much. I know Pau has a partially guaranteed deal in 2019. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how much off the top of my head is guaranteed. Let's see. Basketball Insiders.
I mean, that would be fun.
Okay.
Quickest rebuild in history.
That doesn't say. That's not helpful. Cool. Where is it?
I don't know.
I could have sworn he had partial guarantee, but it's not listed on here. I thought it was like $3 million or something, or three or six or. Either way, let's see.
They need to work it. I mean, absolutely, they need something needs to be worked.
Yeah, they would have to like dump, at least dump Patty Mills most likely. But
I have
right.
it here, by the way. I have it here. Basketball References actually. Their contract section has really improved.
Oh, good.
So it's $6.7 million guaranteed for 2019-2020.
Interesting. Pascal. Okay. Huh. And I bet. Yeah, I mean. LaMarcus is at $26 million.
Mm.
Even right now, if you look at their books, including Kawhi, it's a $21 million player option. They would have to get creative. They'd have to cut Pau and probably dump Patty Mills. But
yeah, Patty Mills is the one they need to find a way, you know, to move on from.
Right, but they really that. Yeah, they don't have any big salary commitments aside from that. So yeah, LaMarcus, Jimmy. Kyrie, big
and the cap at that point is probably going to be
109.
Yeah, 109.
Yeah, they could make it work. Probably, it would take some finagling, but they, yeah, you're right. It's at least theoretically possible.
And Patty Mills would only have 2 years left of his deal, so they might not even have to give up a lot to get him off the books.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's not that big of a deal, and he is productive. He can actually play. He's not Luol Deng.
Right. And there will be a lot of teams with a lot more cap space next year to burn. Huh. Well, there you go.
You heard it here first, Spurs fans.
We finally gave Spurs fans a reason to be hopeful after your... Oh, well, maybe Pop's going to retire. They could just start anew.
I'm trying to be positive, right?
All right, well, on that note, thank you all for listening to this episode of the NBA Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Tepork, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Did Manu retire yet?
And there goes all the Spurs fans again.